From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Congressman Brad Schneider. He's a Democrat from the state of Illinois, and we're coming to you from his office on Capitol Hill. Congressman Schneider represents Illinois' 10th Congressional District. He was first elected to the House of Representatives in 2012 and then again in 2016. He is currently serving his second term. Congressman Schneider is a member of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, the House Judiciary Committee, and the House Committee on Small Business. Before being elected to Congress, Brad Schneider worked in business and management consulting. On this edition of the program, we'll talk with Congressman Schneider about a range of domestic and international issues facing the United States. We'll get his take on French President Emmanuel Macron's recent state visit and historic address to a joint session of Congress. We'll also look forward to the congressional midterm elections, where analysts say Democrats, the minority party, are slated to pick up a significant number of seats in the House of Representatives. Congressman Brad Schneider, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be with you today.
And thanks for hosting us right here in your office. Before we get into some of the big issues facing the United States, Congressman Schneider, let me ask you what prompted you to run for Congress. What are the issues dear to your heart?
Well, great question. The first time I ran was in 2012. I started running in 2011. And what really prompted me is I looked at the nation, I looked at the world, I looked at the challenge we faced, and I looked at my two sons. They were at that time 17 and 15 years old, and their generation. And it was clear to me that if our generation didn't start addressing these challenges, not necessarily solving all the problems in front of us, but working towards a solution, their generation wasn't going to have a chance. And I spent my career helping businesses, large and small, helping communities tackle problems, and I felt there was an opportunity to do that here. And so I put my hat in the ring and have the great honor and also great responsibility of representing Illinois' 10th Congressional District.
I'd like to ask you about your reaction to French President Emmanuel Macron's address to a joint session of Congress. He was here last week on a state visit.
Right.
He and President Trump seem to get along very well on a personal level, but there are some disagreements over issues. You were there, I'm quite sure.
I was.
What was your takeaway?
Well, I thought it was a great speech. I thought he put into a frame very eloquently the relationship between our two nations, the United States and France, have a close relationship going back to the very beginnings of our nation. And I think he talked about the challenges we face as a world. I was pleased to see him call for the United States to reengage in the Paris Climate Accord. I actually introduced a resolution condemning the decision to pull out. I think the United States has to be a part of that. I was pleased to hear him call for multilateralism, was the term he used many times. I believe the United States has a very important role in global affairs, that the world is a safer, better place when the United States is leading, is working with our allies, France, the Europeans, Africa, around the world. The world needs the United States, but the United States needs to engage in the world as well. And I appreciated that call.
Many analysts say that despite the very close relationship on a personal level between President Macron and President Trump, they seem to differ on a number of issues. And one of his main goals, that is one of the main goals of President Macron, was to try to persuade President Trump not to withdraw from the Iran nuclear agreement. Mm-hmm. He also acknowledges its many shortcomings, but says at the end of the day, it's better to stay in than to withdraw, and that we could, that is the United States and its other partners, make a more comprehensive agreement. There's nothing in the agreement that, for example, precludes the United States or any other signatories from trying to sanction Iran for its nefarious activities in the region, for perhaps trying to get something on ballistic missiles. I'd like to get your take on that argument. Where do you come down?
Well, and President Macron said this, if you think about Iran, the most important thing that hopefully everyone in Congress and across the country and our allies agree on is that Iran must never be allowed to have a nuclear weapon. Not now, not during the term of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the Iran nuclear deal, but not ever. And President Macron said that. I have said that for a long time. I have real concerns about the agreement and have voiced those in the past. But again, what President Macron said, I thought very well yesterday, is until we have something better, walking away carries grave risk. Walking away will either leave the United States isolated if we walk away unilaterally and the Europeans stay. Or on the other hand, if the Iranians say the United States left, we're going to rush to a nuclear weapon. We need to close the gaps and reduce the risks of the agreement. We need to make sure that Iran is never allowed to have a nuclear weapon. But I believe, and President Macron emphasized this, that working with our allies to reduce the risk, close the gaps, to ensure that Iran is adhering to the nuclear agreement for the term of the agreement, and that the world with U.S. leadership is working to make sure that as elements of this agreement expire, we're in a position to make sure Iran is no better positioned or closer to a nuclear weapon than they are today. That's what we have to do.
So basically you're saying the United States should not withdraw coming up on the May 12th deadline.
I have real concerns about unilaterally withdrawing from this agreement without something else in its place. I think the United States needs to work with our allies, the United Kingdom, France, Germany, to close those gaps, to make sure we're addressing Iran's ballistic missile activity, to make sure we're pushing back on Iran's state sponsorship of terrorism, to make sure we're pushing back and precluding Iran from creating a permanent presence in Syria, threatening the United States ally Israel. There are so many things that we need to be addressing in a comprehensive manner, and we need to be using all of our tools and building on all our relationships around the world to make sure that Iran can't have a nuclear weapon and can't achieve its regional goals.
And many analysts have emphasized that doing all those things, that is curbing Iran's nefarious activities in the region, trying to reduce its hegemony, is perfectly compatible with staying in this nuclear deal. There's nothing about the deal that says we cannot do that.
Oh, absolutely. The deal focuses on Iran's nuclear enrichment program. That doesn't preclude the United States of pushing back on Iran's support of state sponsorship of terrorism. It doesn't prevent and shouldn't prevent us of thwarting Iran's ambitions in Syria and Lebanon. It doesn't mean that we can't put pressure on Iran to address their human rights abuses. All of those things we need to continue to work on.
Well, speaking of Iran and working together with our Atlantic Alliance partners, as President Macron eloquently stated, let's look at North Korea. Because in addition to the arguments for staying in the deal and then supplementing it, some are saying that if the United States pulled out of the Iran nuclear agreement, it could send a very negative signal to North Korea, with whom President Trump is preparing perhaps to engage one-on-one. How do you see the relationship between the two?
Sure. I think you have to look at the broad context. You look at the history in Libya. One of the things people have talked about is North Korea looking at what happened in Libya and saying giving up the nuclear weapons could be adverse to the future of the regime in North Korea. We need to be clear that when the United States is negotiating a deal, A, we're negotiating in the interest of the United States' objectives and strategic priorities. B, that we're negotiating in good faith. C, that we understand what our options are and know when to move forward, but also when to perhaps pull back a little bit. And I worry about the administration in these negotiations with North Korea sending mixed signals and unilaterally pulling out of the Iran deal. I fear it was going to send a mixed signal to North Korea and make it harder to achieve what we have to achieve, which is ultimately eliminating the nuclear threat from North Korea.
Indeed. I've heard analysts say that as well, that America needs to be seen to keep its word. And for that reason, staying in the Iran deal, notwithstanding, again, its shortcomings, would be important as well as a signal for North Korea.
I think what's important in all of our international dealings is credibility is the currency of the realm. And if we can maintain our credibility, if the world recognizes that when American leadership, when the United States says we care about something, say we're committed to something, they know that the consequences of our commitment are going to be long term, I think our chances of achieving our objectives are significantly higher.
Congressman Schneider, I know you're a businessman and are a major promoter of small businesses. I'm curious about your view with respect to President Trump's tariffs on steel and aluminum and his, one could characterize, more protectionist type measures vis-a-vis international trade. Where do you come down on that issue?
Earlier this month, we did a tour of manufacturing companies in our district. I represent the 10th District of Illinois. We called it Made in Illinois 10. Visited 12 companies in 3 days. And each of these companies talked about some of the challenges they face. One of the things where we have to work together is on access to talent and making sure we have a trained, productive workforce. Access to capital, making sure companies have the opportunity to invest in their people and equipment and new product ideas. But each of these companies also raised concerns about what they saw as a looming trade war. A trade war benefits nobody. A trade war in particular can make it difficult for small and medium-sized manufacturers like we have so many of in my district. We need to recognize that there are bad actors, that China subsidizing some of their companies, allowing those companies to have an unfair advantage when competing in a global market. That needs to stop, and we need to punish those behaviors. But as far as our policy goes, the companies I visited are looking for from the administration is policies that will promote the opportunities for these businesses to succeed. When trade is fair, when the playing field is level, our companies not only are able to compete, they're able to win and to prosper. And that's what we're looking for in trade policy.
So you're pretty much opposed to these tariffs.
My concern is when the president makes blanket statements and sweeping policy without focused on nuance, without understanding the specific implications and specifically targeting the bad actors, he can cause more damage than achieve intended goals.
And it's interesting how momentarily, at least, he thought that we should reconsider joining the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which he also unilaterally pulled out of earlier in the administration. I guess he was susceptible to some of the arguments from analysts who said that actually staying in the Trans-Pacific Partnership would have been a better way to thwart China's adverse trade practices.
Well, again, I'll talk more broadly. When the United States withdraws, when we withdraw from the international stage, whether it's in diplomacy or in trying to establish fair trade practices that protect our interests but also open up new markets for us, China's going to step in. And this is a real concern. We're seeing it in a number of areas. As I said earlier in the conversation, it's really important that the United States leads, that we engage the world, we work with our allies, we work with our adversaries when we can and stand up to them when we need to. But America's voice and America's focus is critically important as we try to craft a future for our nation.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. We're talking with Congressman Brad Schneider, a Democrat from the state of Illinois. Congressman Schneider serves on the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, the Judiciary Committee, and the House Committee on Small Business. I'm Carol Castiel, and this is a reminder that our Press Conference USA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to Ivang Joe Kofi from Kaduna State, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Back to our very special guest, Congressman Brad Schneider from the state of Illinois. Congressman Schneider, let's turn now to the strategy in Syria. Mm-hmm. We witnessed recently where the United States, in conjunction with allies Britain and France, struck chemical weapons facilities in Syria for the heinous attack by the government on innocent civilians in Douma. And while many laud this act, others are saying it's not enough. It's like a one-off, and we still don't have a very coherent strategy to bring that war to an end. And it complicates things when the president also says he's considering withdrawing the 2,000 troops in northeastern Syria who have not quite finished their job of combating ISIS. How do you see that statement, and what would you recommend for Syria going forward?
I have serious concerns about the president's strategy, or maybe better stated, lack of strategy in Syria. The United States, in my view, has three levels of interest in Syria. We have humanitarian interest, the crisis in Syria, 500,000 people murdered, killed in the conflict, millions of people displaced both internally and outside of Syria, and a conflict that appears to have no end in sight, and the worst may yet be ahead of us. We have safety interests, security interests in Syria. We need to defeat ISIS. This started before President Trump took office. The strategy of eliminating ISIS and eliminating the possibility of ISIS to return to the territory that they occupied is of paramount importance. And that's why we have forces operating in Syria, working with the Syrians, with the Kurds, to defeat ISIS completely and make sure that those communities have the chance to rebuild. Is paramount. But we also have long-term strategic interests for the region. Some of our most important allies, Israel, Jordan on the southern border. Turkey is on the northern border. Iraq, obviously, in the east. What happens in Syria matters to us. And we need to articulate, the administration needs to clearly articulate their strategic objectives, which they have yet to do so. And one of the challenges with the administration is it sends those mixed signals. We're staying in, we're pulling out. We're moving forward, we're moving backwards. We need to understand that Iran cannot have a permanent place in Syria. Iran cannot be allowed to have permanent bases on the border of our ally Israel. We need to understand what our relationship is with Turkey, Turkey's concerns with the YKK, but also the concerns of the Kurdish people within Syria. We need to understand Russia's objectives and make sure that we are avoiding a head-on conflict with Russia, but also achieving our own United States objectives. So it's a long answer to a short question, but Syria is extraordinarily important, extremely complicated, and needs a comprehensive strategy from this administration, which we have yet to see.
Well, speaking of giving mixed signals, and speaking of Russia, Let's turn to Russia, and it's another topic on which President Trump has given mixed signals. Recently, UN Ambassador Nikki Haley said that the United States would be imposing additional sanctions on Russia for its support of President Bashar al-Assad and his use of chemical weapons and other barbaric weapons against his own people. And then President Trump walked that back. So there's another case where it may be confusing to our interlocutors. How does that complicate our efforts in the world?
I think President Trump's unclear relationship with Russia and unwillingness to criticize Russia and Vladimir Putin, reluctance and sometimes refusal to impose sanctions that Congress had overwhelmingly passed, raises a lot of questions and creates a lot of challenges. Russia threatens the United States' interests on many levels. First, we can talk about the interference in our elections. There is no question our intelligence community is unanimous in their assessment that the Russians tried to meddle in our 2016 election. They've tried to meddle in previous elections. They are going to try to meddle in the 2018 and future elections. We need our administration, the president, the Department of Justice, to be stepping up and understanding what happened and making sure the United States is taking the actions to prevent any effort of Russia or any other foreign government, for that matter, to interfere in our elections. But Russia is also a threat to our interests in Europe, our allies, whether it's in the Baltics or our traditional Western European allies. Russia challenges them. Russia threatens them, their activity in Ukraine, their occupation of Crimea. This is something that we need to develop and push forward a strategy. Russia is a threat to our interests in the Middle East. We see that in Syria and the threat to trying to achieve what we need to in Syria. But they're also a key player in addressing the issue we talked earlier about with Iran. Russia is going to be a key player in whatever we ultimately achieve with North Korea. So Russia is an important player in the world. We need to understand, again, what our strategy is on pushing back on Russia where we have to. There are going to be times when we need to work with them. But the president's inconsistency, his unwillingness to address what the intelligence community has unanimously articulated as far as activities the Russians have taken against our interests, is a real problem.
And that, of course, leads me to the Robert Mueller investigation of Russia's nefarious activities with regard to the 2016 presidential election. Again, an area where Mr. Trump is not consistent. Sometimes he says, yes, they meddled, and sometimes he walks that back. And I suppose that raises questions about whether or not there may have been what is called collusion or some kind of conspiracy between members of the Trump campaign and Russia. And that's part of what Robert Mueller, the special counsel, is looking into. Mm-hmm. And we have seen recently where there have been threats perhaps to fire him by the White House, even Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. And this is causing deep concern among many Americans across the country. And of course, members of Congress. And you are on record as co-sponsoring legislation to actually protect the special counsel from being fired. And the House of Representatives has a companion bill to the one in the Senate. Why do you think that legislation is necessary?
First, what's necessary is that Robert Mueller complete his investigation. There is absolute consensus among our intelligence community that Russia tried to interfere in our election, that they are intent and committed to trying to interfere in our next election. So they interfered in 2016, they're going to try to interfere in 2018. We need to understand what they tried to do and work to defend it. That's the purpose of the Mueller investigation, to understand completely, comprehensively what happened, who was involved, what steps we have to take to make sure that we can thwart their next efforts. The president seems to be 100% committed to trying to block Mueller's effort. He's raised his own concerns, whether it's about the legitimacy of his election, which is not what the Mueller investigation is about, or activities his campaign or the administration might have taken with the Russians. My position is we need to let the investigation go to its conclusion and follow where the facts will take us. That's why it's critical that we protect Robert Mueller and his investigation, and that we make sure that anything the administration tries to do to block it is prevented from having an effect on the outcome of the investigation.
You're not under any illusions that this will pass the House of Representatives, this legislation.
I would hope that my colleagues on both sides of the aisle will focus on the fact that a foreign country tried to interfere in our election, took actions to try to undermine our democracy. This was a grave, aggressive act against our nation. I would hope that independent of party, Democrat, Republican, independent, all of us can come together and say we need to defend our democracy and push back against these efforts. While it's an uphill climb, I do hope that my colleagues on both sides of the aisle will join and make sure that we protect this investigation and make sure that where the facts lead us, in our oath to the Constitution in defense of this country, we follow the facts.
Congressman Schneider, let's turn now briefly to the so-called travel ban, which is being heard by the Supreme Court. Mr. Trump famously issued a travel ban in the first days after his inauguration. That didn't go anywhere. It was struck down, a second one, and now a third one. This third iteration of the so-called travel ban was heard by the Supreme Court this week. It was controversial, of course, initially, because many people said it feels like a Muslim ban. They were mostly Muslim countries, and some of the Muslim countries on it didn't really pose a threat, and other Muslim countries that actually do pose a threat or where we have evidence of serious terrorism, they were off of it, like Saudi Arabia or Pakistan or even Egypt. At any rate, this is a perpetual ban on people from five mostly Muslim countries, plus a few more, I think, North Korea and Venezuela. And it was imposed per President Trump for national security reasons. Where do you think the court should come down on this particular matter if you had a say?
My hope is that the court would come down on protecting and preserving the security, but also the principles of our nation. We do need to protect our borders and make sure we know who's coming in, and people who are intent on causing harm to our country or our people are prevented from entering the country. But a broad sweeping ban on a group of people, whether it's because of their religion or because of their nationality, because of their ethnicity, doesn't achieve that. We need to be looking at each and every individual independently and making sure that those who seek to do us harm have no chance to get into the country. And God forbid someone does come into the country, we can quickly apprehend them and catch them before they are able to cause any harm or damage. That is an intelligent policy that looks at the threat at an individual basis. My concern is what the president does has made these broad sweeping claims, some that cannot be justified. As you noted, some of the countries on the list have no history of citizens threatening the United States, and countries not on the list have a number of people from those countries who have sought to do us harm. That's why it's important to look at the individual and not make the broad sweeping judgments that the president so often is willing to make.
Sticking with immigration, let's take a look at DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. And of course, we know that President Trump last year set a March 5th expiration date for that program, which has provided temporary work and study permits for over 700,000 immigrants brought here illegally to America as children, and they're often referred to as dreamers. Now, this week, a federal judge ordered that the Trump administration actually keep DACA in place and to accept actually new applicants. How do you see DACA, and do you think that it should actually remain, or that these so-called dreamers, that their status should in the long run be regularized?
Sure. The dreamers are young people who came to the country as young children with their parents. They grew up here. They went to our schools. They played in our baseball leagues and were in our dance recitals. These are people who share the American dream just like every other one of our children. And their hopes and aspirations reflect the best of what this nation has to offer. And their success truly is our success. So we need to deal with this. President Obama issued his executive order that created DACA because of his frustration of his inability to get anything on immigration through Congress. I believe personally we should have comprehensive immigration reform, that would bring 11 million people out of the shadows to pursue their dreams, allow them to start businesses, buy homes, get an education, grow our economy. And that's not me talking, that's the independent Congressional Budget Office who says it will add $2 trillion to our economy. But short of achieving full comprehensive immigration reform, hundreds of thousands of young people took our country's word and came out and applied for DACA. We owe it to these people to give them the chance to succeed. It's Congress that should take the action. That's why I am a co-sponsor of the DREAM Act. I'm a co-sponsor of the USA Act, introduced by Will Hurd and Pete Aguilar, that would address both DACA and elements of our border security, which we have to constantly improve. We can do this. Congress should do this. The only reason we haven't done this is because the Republican leadership have blocked it from coming to the floor for a vote. And I'm hoping in the next several weeks we'll have the chance to actually take a vote and address this issue once and for all.
We actually interviewed Congressman Will Hurd, who is a Republican from the state of Texas. So, as you indicated, there is bipartisan support for a comprehensive solution in the long run and perhaps for the dreamers in the short run.
Absolutely. There's support for the USA Act, as you mentioned with Congressman Hurd. There is a effort underway with over 240 members, Republicans and Democrats, to bring these votes or these bills to the floor for a vote. Given the chance to have the vote, I'm confident that Congress will do the right thing and take care of the dreamers.
Congressman Schneider, on the refugee policy, which is sort of related to immigration, President Trump has reduced the number of refugees who he says can come to the United States. He's cut that number to 45,000. That's the lowest number since World War II. Some people say this is not just a betrayal of our values, but also our interests, because some of the refugees are the most productive citizens in the long run. How do you see this refugee policy?
It's extraordinarily unfortunate to see the administration, President Trump, taking this position and holding a hand, keeping refugees from looking to our nation for hope. For our entire history, we have been a light to other nations on our values of democracy, of opportunity, of equality. And we've been a beacon to those who are suffering around the world, suffering oppression, suffering from racism, from inability to pursue their faith or pursue their political ideologies. Our country has been a beacon of hope to those people, and we need to continue to do that. I think it hurts our standing in the world. It doesn't reflect the nation that our founders intended us to be. It's not a reflection of the nation that I grew up in or my parents grew up in. My personal story, my mother's mother, my grandmother, was a refugee from the pogroms of Russia. She came into this country in 1912 as a little girl. She was able to join her family that had come earlier in Colorado. That's the family reunification we are working so hard to preserve. And her story is the American dream. She had six children who had 18 children in my generation. My generation has 40 people who are working to pursue their dream, raise their family, and make our country a better place. That's what refugees are, and we should again be living up to our values and holding ourselves to a higher standard.
Turning briefly to the problem of gun violence in this country, we see so many young people across the country, particularly those who survived the Parkland shooting, that horrific shooting in Florida. We see now a mass movement. Up until now, it's been very difficult to get comprehensive background checks or any minimal gun reform legislation passed. Are you optimistic that perhaps we're at a different juncture?
I'm hopeful. I can't say I'm optimistic. We need to address the epidemic of gun violence affecting our country, communities, rural and urban, communities large and small. This is a real challenge to our country, that what these young people, Parkland High School kids, but also kids across the entire country, are challenging our generation with a simple question: what more can you do to keep us safe? Safe at school, safe in theaters, safe in parks. We need to work to protect our children. And there's common sense things we can do, from universal background checks to making it harder to traffic guns across state lines, to make it harder to get access to these military weapons and high-capacity magazines that allow someone to fire off 100 bullets within a minute before anyone has a chance to take an action. We can respect the Second Amendment and protect our children. We can do it in a way that is bipartisan and in a common sense approach. We just need to have the conversation. What these young people are doing is bringing the conversation to the fore. I like to say revolutions are usually started by students. Often it's college students. What I believe we're seeing is a revolution started by high school students, not trying to turn the world upside down, but trying to turn their world and our world right side up.
And lastly, Congressman Schneider, a look ahead to the midterm congressional elections coming up in November. As you alluded to earlier, Republicans who control Congress now are blocking a number of issues to come to the fore. And many Democrats, and you're one of them, are hoping that perhaps there'll be a so-called blue wave, that the Democrats will not only win, but even perhaps take over control of the Congress, because there's so much disenchantment across the country with the current Congress, and some are also disappointed in the administration. How do you see these midterms, and will you be running again?
So I am running again, and I'm hopeful to be back in the next Congress. I am hopeful to be in the majority in the next Congress. I've been in the minority. I'd rather be in the majority and have the opportunity to really work to push forward some of the issues that we all care about, issues of economic opportunity for all Americans, issues, as we touched on, of addressing common sense legislation to help keep our communities safer, making sure that health care is more of a privilege instead of a right. There's so many things that we need to work on.
You mean more of a right instead of a privilege?
More of a right, thank you. So working to make sure that health care is a right, not a privilege, and that every American has quality, affordable health care. Those are important issues that we, as a country, in a bipartisan way, should be working on. Progress is better made and longer lasting when it is done with Democrats and Republicans working together. I want to be in the majority. I'm confident that if we can take the majority, that we will get back to the tradition that this body has had in the past of regular order, where bills are introduced, they go to committee, there's constructive debate, amendments offered, and then they're brought to the floor for a vote. And hopefully we'll have opportunities for Republicans and Democrats to vote on some things together and put the interests of the American people and the country far ahead of party interests.
Congressman Brad Schneider is a Democrat from the state of Illinois. Congressman, thanks so much for your time and your terrific insights.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed this very much.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Rebecca Ward for booking our guest. Our engineer and producer was Gary Jaffe. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.